Well, Richard C. Hoagland is the founder and principal investigator of the Enterprise Mission, a public policy and research group that has been investigating the scientific possibility of intelligently designed extraterrestrial artifacts across the solar system for the past 10 years. Richard has previously served as museum curator of astronomy and space science, science advisor to Walter Cronkite and CBS News, head of special projects at New York's Hayden Planetarium, and NASA consultant to the Goddard Space Flight Center. In addition, Richard is the author of The Monuments of Mars, A City on the Edge of Forever, and winner of the Engstrom's Medal for Excellence in Science. He's our guest this hour on Coast to Coast AM. Hello, Richard. How are you?
Good evening, George. I hope you enjoyed your sojourn at 19.5.
I did. It was a quick one, and you'll get a kick out of this, because as I was there at this major event with tremendous people who love Coast to Coast, one person raised his hand. His name was Scott. He was in a wheelchair, and he said, "When are you going to have Richard Hoagland on again?" And I said, "Well, aww, funny you bring that up, Scott. It'll be on Tuesday." And he said, "I just want you to know, and would you tell him?" So I'm going to. He says, "Whenever I hear Richard coming on the show, no matter when, even if I hear it that moment, I stop whatever I'm doing, and I go to the radio and I listen to Richard." How about that? And that's one of your fans in Hawaii, Richard.
Well, thanks, Scott. I really enjoy hearing that.
So what's been going on? I thought you were going to be in Los Angeles tonight.
Yeah, well, you know, Hollywood meetings get
postponed,
canceled or postponed or changed. Or, you know, we're in the throes of negotiations and there's nothing clear or unambiguous about Hollywood. So it's been delayed.
All right. Well, you got what? Part five up now on...
Part five is up. I'm working on part six. We've been working, for the folks that don't know what we're talking about, on a series on this extraordinary little place called Iapetus, the eighth moon of Saturn, orbiting 2 million miles away from the incredible ring planet that was photographed close up for the first time on New Year's Eve a few months ago.
That's right.
And it returned, you know, the Cassini mission returned some extraordinary data that we have posted in a series of five sections of this very long piece I'm writing, documented links, and we're making some pretty outrageous proposals, kind of deliberately, George. What I'm trying to do is to kickstart the American space effort to get people to really lift their eyes past the horizon to the skies again and think unthinkable thoughts. And when you look at this data, you know, particularly the geometry of this moon, which is incredibly straight edge for hundreds of miles, and then the edge makes a bend, and then another bend, and when you look at the pictures and the raw data and in the enlargements the JPL has provided, there are no real answers within the standard astrophysical or planetary science community to what we're seeing.
Well, it is strange. Now, let me ask you this, because I've got a couple emails from today, and some people say, "Come on, George, do you really believe Richard C. Hoagland?" Let me ask you this. Do you believe, for example, that Iapetus could be indeed artificial Death Star-type craft, or are you just doing this because it's just great radio, great pictures?
Well, I believe there's something bizarre about this moon. Whether it's artificial, meaning that it was built from the ground up, I'm beginning to believe now that it's not, that in fact it was modified, heavily, heavily modified. And in Part 5, I lay out a technology called carbon nanotubes, which explains not only how it could be modified, it explains the origin of these ideas, the materials, how they were found in 85 in laboratories here and in England, but how you could apply them to this kind of a construction where you could create incredibly super strong, you know, I mean, this material is 1,000 times stronger than steel, George, so you could create enormous space structures. And we're not going to know unless we go back close up and get much, much better data. But when you look at all the evidence we've assembled, the wall, the shape, the distance, the orbital parameters, all of it, which is in this five-part series that's at the top of the Enterprise main page, and I presume that Lex has linked us over on Coast to Coast.
Of course
AM.
He has.
The article series is called A Moon with a View, What Did Arthur Know and When Did He Know It?, a reference to my good friend Arthur C. Clarke, who put his monolith on Iapetus back when he and Stanley Kubrick were working on 2001. The bottom line is, I, of course, don't know. But the evidence is so provocative, and we have a 6-ton spacecraft out there tonight called Cassini, that if NASA simply directs it for a couple of close passes before September 2007, which is their, you know, first advertised close approach again, we could really know. And I am going to lay out in part 6 and probably part 7 a specific mission plan which could tell us some things that we don't know tonight, which could potentially resolve the mystery.
And there are other issues that you bring up that you don't back down on. Water on Mars, the possibility of artifacts.
I'm not backing down on Iapetus as artificial.
No, I know.
What you mean
I know.
By artificial. I mean, are you speaking tonight from an artificial place on planet Earth?
Of course.
Los Angeles?
Yeah, of course. It was built. I'm standing in a built facility.
But how far down does it go, George?
I don't know.
Well, Los Angeles.
In Los Angeles, because it's a earthquake zone, probably, you know, the metal pylons probably go down a long way.
Well, there aren't even basements. In New York, you have as much of the city below Manhattan landscape as you do above.
There are no basements out
there. Yeah, so you've got 1,000 feet of city under New York, but even under New York, if you extend the, you know, your search radius down to the core of the Earth, you know, some of these critics would not claim that's artificial. I'm saying that the surface of Iapetus has been radically reformed by the evidence we're looking at, and we have no idea how deep it goes, how many shells, how many layers, how many floors. Did they take a natural moon and modify it? Yes, that's probably what happened.
Ah, okay.
But we can find out if we send this spacecraft back to get much better data, and NASA at this moment tonight does not seem inclined to do anything in this regard until September 2007.
Well, assuming we get Mike Griffin, who's the NASA appointee, the chief administrator on this program, and of course you are an invited guest, you can ask him that.
Well, let me make one other point. There are some people who claim that I'm trying to throw out the years and years and years of careful mission planning by the Cassini team to go off on some kind of harebrained wild goose chase. And my answer is absolutely not. To go anywhere in the Saturn system, they have to fly by the one large 3,000-plus-mile moon of Saturn called Titan, because it's the only place that has the gravity that you use to slingshot your way around with a few rocket bursts to get to other places. So there are 44 planned flybys of Titan in the four-year standard mission. I'm proposing that NASA redirect a couple of those flybys so that it takes them out to the orbit of Iapetus in the plane of Titan's orbit. And they could do that within the next several months, once, maybe twice. And because Cassini could die at any moment, wouldn't it be a tragedy, George, if we have all these stunning mysteries and we never know because there's nothing in the pipeline to follow Cassini. There's no planned return to Saturn for the lifetime of everyone in this audience. This is our only chance within our lives, and to miss it would be a tragedy, I think, of the first magnitude.
What do you see as the next exciting space venture? Do you think it's this deep impact the satellite ship that's going to smash
really
into a comet?
I mean, That's going to be kind of, you know, flash and fury, as Shakespeare said, signifying not much of anything. You might be able to see it with the naked eye on July 4th. I think it's going to impact. It may tell us something about comets. It may not. The really exciting stuff is going to be when Mars Express, in a couple months, turns on its Marsis radar and begins to ping underneath the surface of Mars. We had an inside leak the other day from someone very closely connected to JPL alerting us that this was a gangbuster development because they may confirm the buried cities under the sediment on Mars. Now, again, this is a hypothesis. Am I saying that they're really there? No, I'm saying that they might be there, and the experimental evidence can tell us, but they've been delaying, as you may remember, deploying this radar for over a year from the date when it was supposed to be deployed last spring. They're finally going to get around to it, we think May, somewhere around that time frame, and so we may know a lot more, and that's the next major exciting space development I'm looking forward to, unless JPL announces that they're going to send Cassini back to Iapetus sooner to get better data, which will resolve many of the mysteries that we've been writing about.
A couple of weeks ago, I had physicist John Ackerman on, who believes in part of Immanuel Velikovsky's theory of the fact that Venus is only 6,000 years old. He has a different theory on how it was formed, but he said something interesting, and it is very close in line to what you've been saying. Now, he happens to believe that Mars eventually came to within 20,000 miles of Earth.
Yeah, I think I heard part of the show that night. He claimed it stood still in a synchronous orbit and then over Tibet.
That's right, and that the water on Mars is now on this planet here.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but I can't quite go there.
But what everybody is talking about, and as you've talked about, is somewhere along the line in this solar system, we've had big objects smashing into planets and everything else.
Well, we've had big things happen. Now, there's the mainstream planetary model, which tries to explain everything naturally. And then there's, our perspective, which is shared people like Tom Van Flandern and, Stan McDaniel and many, many others, Carlotto, that we are really looking at a hidden history of the solar system where the artifacts and evidence of intelligence that came before us is out there if we simply open our eyes and look and have some degree of objectivity as opposed to being afraid of what this data is trying to say. And again, it all comes down to the experimental evidence. These spacecraft are marvelous tools, but if you ask the wrong questions or you don't go back to ask the right questions, a plus billion-dollar mission will give you exactly zero in the way of answers unless you send it to get the answers.
True. Hey, by the way, I have a little surprise for you. I always tend to, because I think you would get a kick out of this.
Yes.
And probably for you, you may even start with a misty tear after I tell you this, Richard. But in the not-too-distant future, Ray Bradbury, who is a fan of us, is going to be a guest on the program for the first hour.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And I'm going to bring you on, wherever you may be, and allow you to come on and chat with Ray as well.
I haven't seen Ray in years.
I think that would be momentous.
Oh, I would love that.
You'd have
fun. He is one of my heroes. You know, the Martian Chronicles indelibly imprinted itself on my life and many others who are listening, and that would be a great honor.
I want to take phone calls when we come back, but I also want to talk with you about some other things, including Coral Castle. There's going to be a solar eclipse on April 8th, right?
That's right.
How will that affect anything out there?
Well, we're looking at a hyperdimensional effect. What I'm going to do is to take Robin and go to Florida in a few days, about next week, to begin measuring during the almost totality part, which reaches Florida, a duplicate of an experiment run by Nobel laureate Maurice Allais back in 1954. He was using pendulums, and he measured some very anomalous motions of pendula, which have not been replicated easily in the succeeding years. We're going to be using our Accutron system to try to see if there is an anomalous effect during the eclipse, and that will lead us in certain directions that will be very near and dear to your heart, George, because We're building up to an overall model, a theory, for what might happen in your magic date of 2012, the Mayan calendar.
Yes.
I was listening to your fascinating show last night with your guests, and I thought it was so incredibly synchronistic, because what we're doing is we're assembling these data points in terms of what is gravity, what is inertia, what are these real cosmic forces that somehow reach out and affect instruments here on Earth, that is not modeled, again, by the mainstream. Well, my friend Jay Widener and I, Jay did some remarkable historical research on a very intriguing monument in southern France called the Cross of Hendaye. And he's, in fact, written a hell of a book on it, and you ought to have him on as a guest. Anyway, it's called the Cross of Hendaye and the End of Time, because not only do the Mayans talk about 2012 as, where something ends and something else begins.
Right.
But it turns out this monument that Jay researched for many years in southern France does exactly the same thing.
That's strange.
It's extraordinarily strange. So we're going to put a conference together for this summer in July and bring a number of very important researchers who have got a convergent look on this problem, the 2012 problem. We're going to call it 2012 Hyperdimensional Alchemy and the End of Time.
Where are you going to be with this conference?
In Seattle.
Ah, okay.
And we will obviously be announcing where and when and some of our speakers. But one speaker I can confirm tonight that I talked to today and I invited, and he was so excited to be part of it, is Jaime Musson.
He's the Mexican television correspondent,
he's the,
right?
He's 60 Minutes Mexican television correspondent who got into this whole strange field in 1991 during the total eclipse over Mexico City of that summer, where a whole bunch of UFOs sat basically around the eclipsed sun, kind of like sending a message, George. These alignments, these cosmic alignments are important. So he's going to be relating a lot of research he's been doing ever since then, including some from some colleagues at the University of Mexico, and some extraordinary footage. And he is our first confirmed speaker at this conference, which I think is going to be a landmark conference pointing toward the end of your radio career.
Oh, who knows? It could also be the beginning. Stay with us. Moment and evening with Richard C. Hoagland and your phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. When I was leaving the old office last night in Los Angeles, I noticed a huge cloud that looked like one of those cotton balls, just kind of sitting up there in the middle of nothing. The skies were perfectly clear, except for this cotton ball cloud. It was the strangest thing I think I've ever seen. And today I open up my emails and Caroline sends me one from Albuquerque, and maybe even Richard has seen this. She said, I saw the strangest perfectly formed round gray balls of clouds I have ever seen. Now that's strange. I wonder what these things are. If any of you saw any of those along the West Coast, simply fast blast me and let me know. How would you like a double CD package? It's called the After Dark CD. Great bumper music, unforgettable calls to the show, and classic ghost stories. You can order it by going to afterdarkcd.com or call this toll-free number at 1-800-598-2331. 1-800-598-2331. I'll take a few questions here with Richard C. Hoagland. Richard, I've got some things to talk to you about, too, when we get into this. But let's go to the fans are calling you, Richard. East of the Rockies, where are you calling from? You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Yes, hello?
Yeah.
Hey, George. Hey, Richard. How are you doing?
Good. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Indiana. Well, my name's Nick.
Hello, Nick. Take
Hi,
away.
Nick. Hey, guys. I am just very, very, very thankful to have people like you out there that is doing this research, because mainstream scientists just don't want to do it. And it just makes me very happy to, you know, turn you guys on at night and listen, and I'm just been an avid listener to your shows. And my question is, if we're, you know, if we're searching around Mars, and why haven't we done anything with the Cydonia Plateau? And I don't know if Richard...
Oh, that, you're going to open up a can of worms, but since you asked...
Have you got a few hours? Well, look, we've been trying. We've sent spacecraft back. When I say we, I mean the American taxpayer. And then we on the outside, you know, I and my colleagues have made a great fuss to try to get them under, you know, paint of God knows what to point the cameras at Cydonia. And then we get pictures that are half pictures here and wrong pictures and wrong lighting there. And then we get pictures where the image is crystal clear and it shows something remarkable. And NASA comes out with a press release saying, nothing there, folks, move along, move along. And we send rovers, but we don't land there where we could get ground truth. I frankly think it's going to maybe take a private mission, which is why I'm so interested in some other developments that we're quietly working on. I have a friend, George, you know, you've had him on the show, Tim Ventura.
Yes, anti-gravity guy.
American anti-gravity. Tim has converted American anti-gravity into a non-profit foundation. And he is now soliciting grant proposals and funding from corporate America and private citizens to basically build the technology to craft the kind of space engines that are not dependent on rockets, so we can go anywhere in the solar system and take our own damn pictures. Now, before people think that's totally pie in the sky, George, do you want to kind of tell everybody what the Russians announced this afternoon?
The Russians are working on their own anti-gravity space drives.
And they announced it in an official Novosti press release. Novosti is the name of the space news agency that used to be TASS. And they buried it in a so-called nuclear power announcement around a manned Mars mission. But down toward the bottom of the press release, there were several paragraphs about an institute working on a anti-gravity space drive they're recommending for use on such a mission. Now, this can only be political. This is a kind of a Putin shot across the bow of George Bush Jr., because there are black projects that have developed this kind of technology here in the United States that we're not supposed to know about. So what Tim has done is to corral all of us into the foundation, and I kind of kicked in $300 from the Enterprise Mission to help him, you know, launch toward his nonprofit status, because unless we take this, you know, a bit in our own teeth and are, you know, captains of our own destiny, I don't think we're ever going to get the truth out of the official space agencies, because it's in their interest not to tell us what's really out there.
And you got to believe, if the Russians are working on this, we are, or we have it, like
absolutely,
you just
absolutely, and that's why I say, I mean, this press story was written by one of the political correspondents for the Russian news agency, which makes it a political story, a message to George Bush. And so I'm looking for some very interesting developments in the next few days on this, because Putin would not have authorized this unless there was something they're trying to say about what's really out there, and it's kind of like a high-stakes poker game. You know, do you know that Putin plays chess?
Of course
he plays
does.
It extraordinarily well.
I'm sure he does. They all do.
This is an interplanetary chess game, and what Putin has apparently done now is basically try to put Bush's king in check.
Well, we ought to get Bobby Flagg. We can't get Bobby Fischer. He's in Iceland. West of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, how are you?
Good. And where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Redwood City, California.
All right. Welcome to the show. Go ahead.
I flew over your little cloud last night when it came up from Orange County, came up the coast. So, you know, I recognize what you're saying. And there's so many cloud formations and unexplainable chemtrails and everything else that, you know, we've got a lot of, I think, entities trying to stop our progress.
Maybe.
And, you know, I'm glad you're going to be doing something on the mercury in the water and vaccines, because there's so many toxic chemicals that I think are retarding people's progress. In fact, the chloramine...
Okay, hold on, though. How about a question for Richard C. Hoagland?
Yeah, this was part of the whole question.
Okay.
I think as far as people being able to ascend into a higher consciousness and be able to solve these problems, and I understand that who controls space, you know, controls everything, that I'm finding it, I want to ask the question of how he perceives how the American public could be able to appeal to the president to allow us to have honest missions, because what we've seen in the past with sandboxes and that sort of thing in NASA, I think it's very discouraging, and I think we should have made a lot more progress by now.
You know, part of this problem, I think, really comes down to what you just said, higher consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
This audience, this coast-to-coast audience, is unique in the world. We are all of like minds. Most of us who listen or participate want to know the truth. Whatever the truth is going to be, we want to know the truth, and we're tired of being fed, you know, the stuff they give mushrooms in the dark and in the basements. So what we have to do is to basically have a unified consciousness, which is we're going to get to the truth. Now, how we do that, what the practical steps are, it can be political. We can send letters or faxes to the White House, and I've been on the show urging people to do that in many, many areas and events and years past. Or we can take matters into our own hands and begin to fund some of the things that Tim Ventura is trying to do, which is to basically create a radical new tech. I mean, do you know, George, there are really cutting-edge scientists at major labs that are doing this research that Tim has his, you know, finger on the pulse
of? Oh, I believe that, sure.
And what he's trying to do is to assemble this into a private effort that basically breaks the glass ceiling, breaks the secrets, and puts this technology on the table for everyone to use. The other thing I want to say about the consciousness is, as we're coming up to this 2012 date, one of the things that Jay and I are looking at in terms of speakers is people who are looking, like your guest last night was talking about, a kind of a state of mind, a kind of a consciousness that goes along with the changes of the physics that the Mayans were talking about. And our evidence indicates, remember I did this consciousness experiment at Coral Castle, you know, last year,
mm-hmm.
that people can actually affect this physics. Well, if that's true, then the physics can affect people. It goes the other way. And as we move toward this 2012 date, as we're going to lay out at this conference in the summer, as the physics changes, more and more people who are predisposed to finding unusual and out-of-the-box answers will get more and more of their inning you know, more of their shot in the sun, because that's the trend curve of where the consciousness appears to be going. I mean, compare what we're talking about tonight, which a lot of people are accepting as possible, with the same kind of conversations we would have had 10 years ago. Have we not made progress in terms of consciousness, George, on these subjects?
We've made enormous progress.
I think we have. And I think it's because we're operating against the backdrop of the physics, which is encouraging this more and more open-minded perspective on what the universe can really do.
Let's go to our wild card line. You're up with Richard C. Hoagland on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, how you doing?
We're fine. And where might you be?
I am in Birmingham, Alabama.
Okay, good to have you with us. Go ahead.
I just had a quick question. Mr. Hoagland had mentioned the experiment on July 4th. I must be out of loop. I was just curious what was going on with that.
That is called the Deep Impact mission, where they're going to blow up a part of a comet.
Well, not exactly. They're going to send two spacecraft. They drop one spacecraft, which is basically a 300-pound copper disc. They separate it, and the trajectory carries it into the path of this comet, and it goes bang because of an impact. That's what they call a deep impact.
Well, they're going to blow up part of it.
Well, the kinetic energy will do interesting things, but there's no explosives involved. It's merely the enormous energy released because of the velocity of the impact.
And what do they want to find out once they do this?
They want to find out the structure of the comet, what it's made of, what kind of a hole it creates, if there's layers. They're hoping to stand off with the second spacecraft, which has the cameras, take pictures, motion pictures, video, and send them back in real time, you know, at a safe distance, if there is such a thing, because they're going to be very close. And they'll just see what this thing is made of. If they wind up shattering it into a million pieces, it'll be incredibly spectacular, as seen with the naked eye standing out in your backyard on July 4th night.
That's true. First-time caller line, you're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah.
My name is Steve.
Steve, great. Welcome. And where are you calling from, Steve?
Long Island, New York.
Oh, okay, go ahead, sir.
Mr. Hoagland, I've actually been following you since the Moon-Mars connection video.
I thought someone was looking over my shoulder.
That video, I guess I've been following you since then, and it actually led me to Coast to Coast.
Well, good.
I love listening to George and Art Bell, George, Nori, and Art Bell every week. But I know hyperdimensional physics is one of your main concepts, and I once came across a color chart that was like six different points, and you put a circle around it. And I don't know if hyperdimensional physics has anything to do with colors, but I know colors have different heat, you know, heat waves.
Well, you can code things in color. I'm not sure I remember the chart you're talking about.
Yeah, I tried to email it to your site once, but it's an interesting concept how different colors could actually fit into the hyperdimensional physics model. And the face on Mars, I've read your book, The Monument of Mars. Just wondering if you're doing anything more with that, or you really moved on to?
Well, it's in its fifth edition. I'm working on a sequel in my copious spare time. I'm also doing television. I've got this new DVD set out, which, by the way, if you really want to see a long exposition of the hyperdimensional physics, we had 9 hours, and three of them we spent discussing a lot of the hyperdimensional implications for spirituality, for conducting experiments, for other dimensions, how they impact the idea of souls, reincarnation, creation, design of life. I mean, anything you almost ever wanted to know about hyperdimensional physics coming from Enterprise is to be found in this DVD set, which is available at 800 number that George gave out about 20 minutes ago, which I will repeat unless you want to, George.
Well, I'll do that right at the end of this hour.
Okay.
A couple fast blasts in, of course. One says, Richard, we will never leave this planet again. We are doomed to stay here. That's a quick one. Here's another one. Thank you for your continuous work overlooking scientists. At least we can get to the truth with you. Here's another. Richard, you need a checkup from the neck up. I like that one. Let's go to our wild card.
You guys are poet and doesn't know it.
You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George. This is Blair in Sedona, Arizona.
Hey, Blair. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi, Richard.
Evening, Blair.
I was going to talk about the Mars Express, but a quick comment on deep impact. It's been brought to that there's an electrical nature to our solar system by McCanny.
And possibly.
I'll
be fascinated
true.
To listen to the debate between him and David Morrison tomorrow night.
Yeah, and there's a possibility the comet could be sort of like a nerve synapse, and it, like on our physical body, it's got the same shape. So I'm sort of hoping we don't go and shoot on that thing because it could echo back some kind of unknown energy we're not really familiar with yet. It's not just a ball of rock and ice. But what chance is the European Mars Express going to have of re-imaging the face, the D&M pyramid, and the glass tunnels, for example?
Well, as you know, we posted a piece on the Dawn color image taken of Cydonia, of the face on Mars and surrounding objects by the Mars Odyssey spacecraft a few months ago, almost a year ago now. And I put a kind of a public call at the end of the piece to email Dr. Gerard Newcomb, who is the principal investigator on the Mars Express camera.
I love that last name, by the way.
Yes.
Newcomb.
Newcomb. He went on the BBC and actually signaled that he'd gotten tons of email from all over the world demanding that he re-image Cydonia. Now, it's not good to take images at any old time, Blair. You got to take them, we now know because of Odyssey, at the right time, which is at dawn or just at sunset when you have that grazing lighting and the glass or the mirrors or the metal or whatever it's made of really stands out like in the image that was taken by Odyssey. So I'm going to post a very detailed piece in the next few weeks on Enterprise, kind of an open letter to Dr. Newcomb laying out when and how such photographs should be acquired by Mars Express so they, you know, advance the story, so we don't just get more same old, like Malin has been taking pictures with the sun overhead, where you can't really tell anything. You need grazing, scattering, incident lighting to see what the stuff is made of down there.
Is it possible, though, Richard, that since the Viking took those pictures and then we had the ones later from the surveyor, that there's been some massive erosion or deterioration?
No, I don't. If there's any deterioration, I think it's in the image processing labs.
Yeah,
and
intentional?
I'll leave it there.
All right. Let's go to our international line. Where are you calling from? Hi there.
Yeah, I'm calling from Salt Spring Island. My name is
British
Dave.
Columbia. Sure thing.
Yeah. Richard.
Yes, sir.
With your Coral Castle?
Yep. One of my favorite places, by the way.
Excellent. I've never been there, but...
you got to go. It's an incredible experience. And if George will do us a great, great favor and tell you all what we find out next Thursday on the evening of the 8th with the eclipse, he can move this along, too.
I might do that if you're nice to me, Richard.
Okay, so I have a background in audio engineering.
Yes.
In the days of actual tape.
Yes.
Now, when we would align heads on a tape machine, we'd send a signal into track 1 and the farthest track, say track 24, and move the heads back and forth with a phase reversal switch until the signal canceled itself completely and we knew the head was aligned.
Mm-hmm.
Now, against...
A destructive interference, right?
Yeah, it's 180 degrees out of phase. It'll cancel itself.
Yep.
So George had a guest on some time ago who said he had witnessed a UFO, and he had this mental images come to him, and one of the things that he saw was that gravity was a frequency.
He could be well onto it.
Now, with Tesla, he had some sort of amplification going. What I was thinking was if you could pin the ground, find the frequency, maybe with a sweep of gravity, take a phase reversal switch, amplify that signal, and get the structure you're trying to move to oscillate 180 degrees out of phase of the frequency of gravity pickup, it should cancel itself and lift.
We know that Lee Scanlon, the guy who built Coral's Castle, was doing something electrical. There are these mysterious boxes with wires running down to the coral blocks that he lifted, 9 tons all by himself. So you may be onto it. Why don't you send me an email? There's an email address at Enterprise. Just send me an email and lay out some ideas, and we will look into doing something with them.
Richard, we'll talk next a couple things. Of course, you know, we're working on trying to get the new NASA administrator appointee on the program. If he does, I'd like you to join us for that discussion.
I would be greatly honored.
And then as soon as Ray Bradbury, I'm told sometime in April, comes on the program, I'll make sure you know about that, too.
Oh, that would be super.
That would be fun. Richard's video, of course, it's the 9-hour DVD series. How about that? Called God, Man, and E.T. You can get it off the EnterpriseMission.com website or call this toll-free number at 1-800-350-4639. Next time, R.C., we'll keep in touch, okay?
Thanks, George.
Okay, appreciate it.